You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
It's Carlin on 98.7 ESPN, 800-919-3776. Joe Douglas should be doing everything within his power right now to get Yannick Ngakoue to the New York Jets. 800-919-3776. Great to be with you. Get on board on Twitter as well, at Chris Carlin, at C-H-R-I-S-C-A-R-L-I-N. Look, when you have an opportunity to get a player the caliber of Yannick Ngakoue of the Jacksonville Jaguars and add him at the impact position of defensive line, you don't waste any time trying to make it happen. Now, you have a player in Ngakoue who has made clear he is not going to play for the Jaguars. So you don't want to get fleeced by any stretch of the imagination. But think back just a few weeks ago when Jamal Adams finally got what he wanted. And that was out of town, even to one of his preferred destinations in the Seattle Seahawks. Jamal Adams was a playmaking safety. It's a nice player to have. It's a guy who could rush the passer, but it's not a guy that can rush the passer like someone who in four seasons has had 38 sacks. 38. He is not happy in Jacksonville, and it's been the case for a long time. So if you're Joe Douglas at this point, look, you are as involved as can be in trying to get this deal done, because all of a sudden it changes the dynamic for the Jets moving forward, especially into this season. It can actually put you in a much better spot. You've already lost Adams, and you've had C.J. Mosley, arguably your best defensive player after Adams left, opt out of the year. You need somebody that can alter the course of a game, and that is Ngakoue. You can talk all you want about the other players that he was playing with down in Jacksonville, and that plays a role for anybody. When you have Josh Allen, you know, when you have Calais Campbell as he did, that's going to play a role in anybody else's success when you have to worry about all of these different pass rushers who are coming at you. And offensive coordinators lose sleep at night trying to account for where you're going to line up. That's what makes it so much more important to be able to get a guy like this. All right, let's talk price. He's obviously disgruntled. He's not going to play for the Jaguars again. Is it disgruntled to the level of Jamal Adams? Frankly, it's past that, because it's gone on longer than the Jamal Adams situation did. I don't think the Jets are going to be able to wrestle him away for a second round pick unless they are willing to go and get him without a contract. I don't think that's something that you want to do right now. If you're Joe Douglas, you have to be trying to get him here and at the same time get a long-term extension secured. If you can get that done, and you can move into next year where there's uncertainty about the salary cap. The cap can drop $24 million. It may stay the same. It may drop some. But it's possible that it can drop all the way to $174 million. And when it comes to the owners, I would virtually operate as if that's going to be the case. So if I can get a deal worked out with Ngakoue's representatives and get him locked in for the long term, I'd give up one of those first round picks that I just got from the Seahawks. I absolutely would do that. Because this guy is 25 years old. As we told you, 38 sacks in his career. You know what else he is? Durable. He stays on the field. 64 games in his career, he's played in 63 of them. He's not somebody that you have to worry about not being out there every Sunday because he's got the slightest muscle problem. He's somebody that is going to be out there and wants to play. His worst season, he had 8 sacks. He had 12 sacks a couple of years ago, 9 2 years ago, 8 this past year after having 8 his rookie year. He is someone that is going to help immensely. He's got 85 career quarterback hits. The Jets don't have that player. The Jets haven't had that player in quite some time. He is affectionately known as, at least what we would affectionately refer to as, a game-breaking, game-changing, game-wrecking talent. This is not somebody who is willing to go out and overpay for a safety because they feel like they're ready to go win a championship, like the Seattle Seahawks did. The Jets may not be ready to win a championship, but a 25-year-old dominant pass rusher puts you in position, if you can sign him long-term, to really get a big piece of what could be a championship team. And to me, boy, the fact that the rumors really started to pop up and they could potentially be in on this. We hear different stories. Manish says they're not in on it. Mike Lombardi says they are in on it. I don't know how you couldn't be in on it at this point. I wouldn't give up two first-round picks, but I'd give up one, and I might give up another pick with him. I would do quite a bit and pay him quite a bit to get him here. Because from a Jet perspective, it changes the dynamic for 2020 and potentially the next 7 years of this organization. And if you're looking forward, you know, you're going to be trying to find a way to restructure CJ Mosley next year. You know, because his contract just kicks forward. You can't go and cut him, but you're going to need some help. This guy doesn't show up. I would much rather have Yannick Ngakoue than Jadeveon Clowney. And you only have to pay for Clowney. If you want to go get Clowney on a one-year deal and bring him in and let him go try to prove it and go get his big year or his big contract next year, by all means, do that. But I don't think that's an option at this point. Ngakoue, to me, is somebody that, frankly, I just trust to produce a lot more. There's going to be a few teams lining up for this. You don't overpay. You don't hand back those two first-round picks you just got. But maybe you give away one of them and you pay a boatload. I would do it. I would do it yesterday. I would do it today. I would do it three times this Sunday. 800-919-3776. They're nuts if they don't go and get him, if it turns out to be a reasonable price. Carlin, 98.7 ESPN, just getting started. 10 minutes after 7 p.m., we will get to the calls right when we come back. We will hit them hard. Open lines, let's go at 800-919-3776. More Jets later in the hour in relation to the quarterback. We all seem to have forgotten that it is year three for Sam Darnold, and we have been focusing entirely too much on what Sam Darnold doesn't have. Maybe we start to put that responsibility in the belly of number 14.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
We also have open lines. Let's do this. 800-919-3776. We start with Spike in New Jersey. He is up first tonight. Spike, how goes the battle?
The battle is going. Last time we spoke, I got the Grom and I got Cole and I got him again and I got you. Not a bad combination. Plus all these NBA games, which have been fantastic. Well, here's my one quick comment on the Jets. Pay the money because it's a pass rusher, and if you have to, raise the price of Q-tips a penny a piece or something, you know? Or baby shampoo. Well, they can't do it with the baby powder. They had a loss there, but kidding aside, they haven't had a pass rusher, they say, since John Abraham. To me, they haven't had one since the stack exchange, you know, really.
Yeah, I mean, Abraham was pretty good, but this guy is not going to all of a sudden be the next sack exchange because they don't have other players with him. But right. At the same time, this is somebody that can, oh boy, this can really, really help.
Yeah. Hey, listen, let's, again, no Paul, I'm talking to you. It's really enjoyable, and hopefully they play. I don't know what's going on. I'm enjoying them taking them a day at a time. You know, I have a good day, I have a bad day, like everybody in life. That's what life's about. But the plethora of sports now, you have to have batteries near you, just in case. Mm-hmm. You don't want to miss anything. Thank God for replays and VCRs and all that stuff. Oh, not VCRs, whatever they're called.
DVR.
Yeah, right. No, that's the brand name. This is generic. But I said this to you last time, DeGrom. I have a split screen. I have DeGrom and Cole on. And I said to you.
Doing the same thing as we speak.
and you said to me, I tried to make the point that they're just both so good at their craft, or look for similarities, and yet there are none, except they're just both great. And let's see what happens. But it is enjoyable. And the last thing is, I really think it's important now not to lose focus. You know, it's funny, I was telling my wife, I follow the CDC like I followed box scores. That's just my nature to grab a little of news and see. And I thought that the numbers of the deaths were going down, and it was almost like a misprint yesterday because it looked like a Sunday to Monday where there's less testing. And I looked again today, and it was 1172. I mean, are we getting anywhere? Because I don't want to go off topic, but I have. I see fewer people wearing masks where I live. I don't know about you. I'll leave you with that, and I'd love to hear your answer.
Spike, thanks for the call. I don't see fewer people wearing masks where I live. I live out in western New Jersey, and I don't see that. When I'm going out and I'm doing the shopping, I do the grocery shopping for our family, meaning me and my wife and the dog. That's what I do. And usually there, I have not seen anybody trying to go into the store without a mask. Now, I'll give you an example. I go and I sit and I go to a breakfast spot that I enjoy. And you sit down and they have outdoor tables. And I'm sitting there and I put the mask down when I'm at the table and I'm going to eat. But when waitress comes over, I cover up, you know, waitresses. And waiters are all wearing masks. I haven't seen that as much. It's not hard. Just wear the damn mask. It's honestly not that hard. Let's hit Joe in Colonia next. Joe, what's up? You're on 98.7 ESPN.
Hey, Chris, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
You know what? You're the Johnny Carson of sports radio. You're awesome, and I've been listening to you for years.
All right, well, I'm not that old. I mean, come on.
Well, no, I'm not saying you're old. You're a legend. I'm not saying you're old, like Johnny. You're a legend.
I'm just pushing it, but I appreciate that.
No problem. I have two quick questions for you.
Yeah.
If the NFL season does not start, how will they go about with the draft?
Well, that's an interesting question. I would guess, and they have not made any determination about that because they are full steam ahead with playing the season.
Exactly.
If I had to guess, pure speculation, I would think that they would take maybe the teams that are in the bottom 10, the middle 10, and then the top 10, or, you know, and tag in the other two.
Right.
And I would think that they would put them in some sort of lottery. In other words, you were in the bottom 10 last year, right?
Right.
I would think that they would take those teams and put them in some sort of a lottery to determine the top 10 picks this year.
Same thing would be the
next round.
Sure. And I think the same thing. That would be the best way to do it.
Yeah. I think that would make it as fair as possible for everyone involved. In other words, you know, if you end up getting the number one overall pick 2 years in a row, if you're the Bengals,
I didn't want to say the Bengals, but
yeah, nobody's going to begrudge you that. But secondly, you're getting it out of pure luck at that point.
Right. And now my other question is, if the NFL season starts, and teams are starting to get eliminated from the playoffs, and the whole team says, listen, you know what? It ain't worth me being here. We're bailing out. How would they address that?
See, the one thing I have not had clarified, and I'm not 100% sure of this, but remember a few weeks ago that there was a deadline to opt out of the season. Are you now allowed to opt out in the middle of the season, or is that now out the window? I don't know the answer to that. And that's the answer I want to get.
Well, I want to thank you for that, because I called a few other people on this station, and they couldn't really even answer, but if a team's eliminated and they figured, hey, listen, we have no chance, why be here and risk ourselves?
I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen like it would happen in baseball, put it that way. Thanks for the call.
Right.
I think the thing you have to remember, Joe, is even when teams fall apart and aren't playing well, coaches always make sure to drive home the point that, you know, the tape doesn't lie. And if you're out there and you're not playing hard, people are going to take notice of that moving forward. And maybe you won't be on this team next year. Now, this is if they're out there playing. If you fall apart and you're having a bad go of it, I am not going to blame you if you hold out or if you bail out. But that's really problematic. That other thing to me is that's why you had to look at a bubble-type situation for the NFL. And you could do it, like I've detailed before, in four different cities. Gerrit Cole, not off to a good start, just gave up a bomb to Choi. 1-0 Rays. I tell you what, you know, I'm not just tossing aside what he has done, because Gerrit Cole has been very good, but let's understand that Gerrit Cole has not been Gerrit Cole. He really hasn't. He hasn't been the dominant level of Gerrit Cole yet. And yeah, look, we're top two here, so I'm not going to get too nuts about this. And I would invite the Yankee calls to get involved. But this is a massive week for the Yankees. This is a massive week for the Yankees. I don't know how you cannot be a little bit concerned just from the fact that you could have the Rays getting into your heads. They've won 4 out of 5 from you already. Cole, by the way, if you were listening to Savages in the Box, which, by the way, drops every morning at 6 a.m. and gives you everything you need off of the Yankees Monday through Friday and previews the next game. If you were listening to Savages in the Box today, you would know that Gerrit Cole has never beaten the Rays in 5 career starts. And that's all over the last few years. And his worst start this year was down there. He struck out 10, but he threw 107 pitches in 4 2/3. And yeah, the strikeouts are a part of that, but he didn't even get through 5 innings. He gave up 3 runs. Rays are on the board tonight with a solo shot. 1-0. Oh, boy. Look out, Jack. Steve in Montville is next on 98.7 ESPN. Steve, what's up, buddy?
When I called the other day, I wanted to play Beat the Fat Man just with shows like MASH or even Batman. From 1960 until 1979, I know every show and character and most all of the lines. But essentially, you said, this is my ball, all the shots I'm going to call. I didn't think your decision was very sound, so I decided to turn things round and round. If you play it my way, win or lose, and I say this with all clarity, I will donate $500 to your favorite charity. Now, the only thing you risk is your pride, and God knows most of that has already gone out with the tide. Consider this a metaphorical slap in the face. Are you going to just sit there, or are you willing to take up the chase? And now for my conclusion, are you really all that good, or is all this just one big fat illusion?
Wow. Wow. You've had time to work on it. I'll give you credit for that.
I hope you're okay. I don't know what happened to you.
I've been fine. I took a little vacation.
Oh, vacation. Good.
I took a vacation last week, and then I've been filling in on the other shows kind of all over the place.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, no, I just couldn't find you, so I was a little concerned.
I know. I can't find myself. Let's talk about this for a second.
Sure.
So you're talking about wanting to take me on
right.
TV shows of the 70s.
60s and 70s, yes, sir. Now, you might want to get somebody to help you, like Rich Eisen. He's a fellow Staten Islander, as I am.
Right.
So that would be interesting.
I don't know that Rich likes me, but that's another topic.
Well, okay. I didn't know the backstage drama at the station.
No, there's no backstage drama. I love Rich. Yeah. Rich was given some bad information one time. And
happens.
My former employers.
Yes, I can understand that.
I'll tell you what it was briefly, okay?
And
okay, I don't think that I joke when I say it, because I don't think that Rich really has anything but nice things to say, because I love the guy. I think he's a great guy. But one time, they were trying to get him, I forget who it was, maybe it was Tennis Channel when he was doing some tennis at CBS or something, was trying to get him booked, and Mike and Chris did not want to put him on. And so I was honest with Rich, and I just said, listen, a lot of times they like putting analysts on. You know, they don't love putting hosts on. And Dog saw him later that day, and, you know, Eisen's like, you know, and you know, Chris, being Chris, you know, cannot ever be confrontational in person, says, you know, hey, listen, we got to get you on, and which is, you know, phony. And I love Dog, but he would do that. And Rich would say, well, I think my guys were trying to, but they said, no, well, I know Carlin doesn't like you. Like, what the hell is that?
Yeah. So are you taking my challenge or not?
All right, but I haven't seen shows in the 60s.
I know. That's why you have to get a ringer, somebody that can help you.
I mean, you're going to be hitting me with F Troop and all
of
that.
No, you're
going to
pick the question. You're going to pick the questions. It's just like Beat the Fat Man.
I'm going to pick the questions.
Well, not you. The producer will pick whoever picks the questions for how you do it now. And I won't know what they are.
How about this? How about
this?
First of all, you don't have to do it for charity.
Well, I would like to.
Okay. One night, I don't have $500 to give anybody. The charity should be me.
No, I'm going to give the money, win or lose. You don't have to give anybody anything. I'll do it, win or lose.
Here's what I will do.
Okay.
I will take you on in MASH trivia.
Oh, okay, fine. That's okay.
MASH, I know inside and out.
All right, so do I. So, okay, yeah, I'll go for that. Absolutely.
So I'll give you that opportunity. Just give me a chance to get back into the regular schedule.
Oh, sure. No, I don't want to.
Until early September. But that was quite a poem you put together tonight, Steve, and I appreciate the call. We'll make it happen, though. I'll give you a chance.
Okay, now, could I talk about the Mets?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. I think if Steve Cohen's bid is the highest bid, the Wilpons will take it, because this is sort of like Zsa Zsa Gabor and her ex-husbands. She said, I never hated a man enough to give back the diamonds.
Right.
So they'll take the money.
I think that they're trying to drive up the price, obviously.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But they'll take the highest.
They're trying to drive up the price. And they're trying to do it by saying two things. Number one, that Jeff hates him. And number two, that baseball's not going to approve him. I got news for you. If he's got the deepest pockets, baseball is going to approve him. That's what it's going to boil down to. And thanks for the call, Steve. There's no doubt in my mind that if you have an A-Rod group that is having trouble putting all of the money together, and you have a group that is like Steve Cohen, who's worth $14 billion and will have no problem meeting the price and will have no problem operating costs, anything like that, I think you'd get it. The biggest problem that you have is that the owners don't want to approve him because he's going to go spend money. But if he spends money, that's good for the game. It doesn't mean everybody else has to spend the money. What it means is the two teams in New York are going to be more relevant. That is good for the game. If the Mets are good, it helps baseball. And that's, we know what Steve Cohen wants to come in and do is win with this team. The fact that he grew up a Met fan, and this is important to him from that standpoint, great. I really don't want to see him overpay for the team, though. Because, you know, the Wilpon stuff, I told you, when I worked at SNY, loved Fred, got along with Jeff, never an issue. But watching some of how this stuff goes down, with Jeff at this point, I don't want to, he's acting just like a spoiled child. You know, the deal fell apart the first time because you wanted to run the team for 5 years. Well, you're not qualified to run the baseball team. You're not. You've run it into the ground. That's what's happened. Secondly, you're not selling off the network because that makes a ton of money. And whoever's buying the team without the network is going to end up behind the eight ball with all the money that they owe. They've got two massive debts that are due next year. That's why they're trying to sell now. So I hope that Steve Cohen doesn't have to pay $2.6 billion for this team. It sounds like Josh Harris and David Blitzer are not going to pay anywhere near that. They're not going to overpay for it. And you don't want them to win this bidding process. You don't want them to be your owners. They're not going to spend money on the product. I promise you that. And then you're down to A-Rod and J-Lo and J.P. Morgan Chase. And they're trying to put the money together, but they don't have that level of cash. And you got Rapoli and Vinny Viola. You got nine people involved here. How much are they going to want to put in? Give me the guy that has the money. I'll tell you one other thing. If it at all becomes an issue like they're talking about, like things are leaking into the papers, and I'm not making Cohen out to be a saint because clearly he's a little sketchy. But I got news for you. Anybody who's made that kind of money is a little sketchy in some way. They've done some sketchy things. But when it comes to what we've heard about lately with the potential of the harassment suits or the discriminatory suits, they're not against Cohen directly. They're against his organization, which obviously he's in charge of. And it's a terrible thing. I am not defending that at all. But let's not forget that it was only a few years ago that Jeff Wilpon and the Mets were getting sued for the same thing. Saying things like that a pregnant woman who worked there in the ticket office would get paid more once she got married. Can't do that kind of stuff. So let's not make, you know, you want to bring that up? Let's go back to the history and really look at what the history was. That's garbage. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. It's not just all about Ngakoue, although they do have to find a way to go and get him. It's also about the quarterback, Sam Darnold. As much as we've discussed what he doesn't have, isn't it about time that we saw what he does have?
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
3 minutes after 8 p.m., Rich Simidi, ESPN New York. I'm sure camped out at Morristown Airport waiting for Yannick Ngakoue's private plane to land. Fair to say?
The shades of Brett Favre. That's what we did when Favre, camped out at Morristown.
How you doing, Rich?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
No, thank you for giving us a few minutes. Okay, so what are you hearing? Separate fact from fiction. Are the Jets potentially going to be in on Ngakoue or not?
Chris, I was aware of some Twitter reports today. I do not believe they are interested in Ngakoue. I've been saying that for the last few weeks. I'm going to be consistent with that. I checked with some people today. I don't know where this story is coming from. Well, I know where it's coming from on Twitter, Yeah. Michael Lombardi reported it, a former GM. My information is that they're not interested.
Thanks, Rich.
You sound like you want it to happen.
Well, let me ask this question then. Why wouldn't the Jets be interested in a guy like Ngakoue, especially if they could get a longer-term deal worked out with him now?
Well, you by rule, he cannot sign a long-term deal right now.
Well, then that's a problem.
He must, because he's a franchise player, he must, you know, the deadline was July 15th, and once
that's right, okay.
Yeah, so he has to play this season on a one-year contract. It's $17.9 million, which is the Jets are not going to pay $17.9 million for a player to come in this year. So he's got to play, any team that trades for him would pay him that for this year, and then perhaps hope that he is willing to sign a long-term agreement after the season. Unless, you know, this is very similar to the Clowney situation last year when Houston traded him to Seattle. You know, what they did was, you know, Houston agreed to pay half his salary, and then Seattle agreed not to franchise him. And so, P.S., we all know Clowney's still on the open market right now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's the holdup. You know, so you're trading for a player that, you know, could be a one-year rental, $18 million. And a player, quite frankly, I don't think the Jets are in love with the guy. I think they see him as a one-dimensional player, does not play the run. And if they wanted to bring in that type of impact player, they might as well just go out and get Clowney. You know, because you wouldn't have to give up any compensation for him. You just sign him as an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, my only thing about Clowney, Rich, is that you look at him, he's never had a double-digit sack season, and I know everybody talks about his ability, but is he somebody that would come here without a longer-term deal, considering what the financial situation could look like next year?
He has no choice. I mean, he's not. I'd be shocked if he got a long-term deal from any team right now. He's going to have to, you know, do a one-year prove-it deal. And let me add, I don't think the Jets are interested in him either. I was just throwing that out as a more likely alternative to Ngakoue. But I don't think the Jets. I've been told the Jets have zero interest in Clowney as well. So he's going to have to find a place, and I'm sure he's going to want to go to a place where he could be on a Super Bowl contender. You know, play for probably $6 to $8 million this year, and hope he does well, and hope he can find a long-term, you know, agreement after the season.
Rich Cimini, ESPN New York. Well, bad job by me about the July 15th thing, because you know that's obviously a big problem. You're talking about $18 million this year, and look, I understand you can't pull a Gettleman. You can't pull a Gettleman and try to bring the guy in and then hope that, you know, he'll like the surroundings and want to stay, and you've handed him all the leverage beyond that if you'd actually did want him to stay. So,
well, if they franchise him again next year, then, I mean, the cost would be just exorbitant. It would be in the mid-20s. So, I just think the Jets are, you know, I'm not saying they're satisfied with what they have. We know edge rusher is a huge need for them. And I'm not saying that, you know, they're not going to look to add in that area. I just don't think they're going to be shopping in that market.
Rich, let's talk a little bit about Sam Darnold. And I've heard quite a bit about how he looks a lot more confident, looks a lot different. I read a quote today that he says that he can see the play before it happens, so to speak.
Right.
What are the expectations here, Rich, as far as his growth when you factor everything in, the offseason and that they don't have a lot of playmakers?
They don't. You know, I think it's an issue. I think his pass protection will be better this year. Last year, he was the second most pressured quarterback in the league. It was a ridiculously high number. It was like 35% of his dropbacks. He was under pressure. So I think the pass protection will be better this year. Le'Veon Bell looks really good. I think the way to go for them is to emphasize the running game out of the gate early in the season. That way you can minimize, you know, frankly, I think they're thin at wide receiver. So play to your strengths, Le'Veon and Frank Gore, and try to run the ball. And that way you can set up some play action with Darnold. I don't think they did a good job last year of establishing any sort of play action. And Sam had no running game support last year. I think they were 31st or 32nd in running the ball. So that's what I would try to do. And they do expect a big leap for him this year, Chris. I mean, it's his second year in the system. And, you know, I was there when Sam said that quote today. He says, I'm seeing things quickly. Adam Gase said the thing he notices is that he's just his dropbacks are more decisive, quicker, you know, thinking quicker on his feet. Now, again, they've only had a couple of practices in pads, and let's look, he was throwing again. None of their starting corners are on the field right now. He's throwing against backup corners, so we have to keep it in some perspective here. But from all indications, he looks more decisive and actually more vocal. Has spoke, you know, not he's not a rah-rah guy, as we all know, but the players are saying that he's become a little bit more of a vocal leader this year.
Rich Cimini, ESPN New York, with us. Just along those lines, Rich, in the third year for a quarterback, even though he may not have the greatest weapons to work with, isn't it fair that as they're looking for him to develop, part of it is that a franchise quarterback has to elevate those that he does have to work with?
Right.
Isn't that a fair thing to look for this year?
Yeah, I think if he is who they think he is, then he will be able to do that because the Jets believe he has the ability to play on that level. How many quarterbacks in the league can do that? I mean, there's what, really like maybe 6 to 8 legitimate guys who fall into that category as a franchise type guy who could elevate the people around him. So I think the Jets are hoping that Sam can be that guy. I think he's shown signs of that. I mean, he's got crazy natural ability. I mean, you see some of the innate things he does, especially outside the pocket when the play breaks down. I mean, he's exceptional at that. And I think he just has to be a little bit more consistent in the pocket. You know, his interception numbers are still a little high, and just better decisions on a down-to-down basis. And if he can achieve that level, then maybe he can be that guy that you just described.
Rich, let's go back to Bell for a second. When the Jets look back and evaluate him off of last year, how much of it had to do with Le'Veon? How much of it had to do with the porous offensive line?
Well, I mean, the line was not good. I mean, it was arguably the worst offensive line in the league. I mean, I'm a stat geek. I could throw out some numbers. I mean, Le'Veon was getting hit in the backfield quicker than I think maybe any running back in the league. Wow. So I think that is the main reason. I think the Jets feel that was the main reason. But I think if you gave some people some truth serum over there, I think they would say, too, that Le'Veon left some yards on the field. When he did have an opportunity, when there was some daylight, he did not hit it the way he should have. And in fact, he has come out, I think, a week ago and pretty much said the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, he was not in that peak condition last year that he feels he's in right now. I think his longest run last year was 15 yards. I mean, Chris, come on. I mean, even with bad blocking, you know, you're bound to hit something longer than 15 yards, and he did not last year. But, you know, he looks like he's in great shape this year. He looks a little quicker. Let's see if he can sustain it, you know, through the season.
Is he a guy, Rich? He caught 66 passes last year. But when you look back at his days in Pittsburgh when he was most effective, they're targeting him 100 times. With the lack of weapons, is the possibility there that they could – you know, employ him a little bit more like Pittsburgh did, where they would occasionally line him up in the slot, do things like that?
Yeah, you know, I talked to Todd Haley, the former Pittsburgh offensive coordinator, going into last year, and, you know, and he said this, and I looked it up, and it turned out to be true. Most of his catches in Pittsburgh were when his back was to the defense, and he was the check down valve for Ben. Ben was in trouble. You know, he's looking around, he can't find anybody. All of a sudden, he just kind of has this seeing eye pass to Le'Veon, and they had such an amazing chemistry, and Le'Veon would get the ball, and there'd be so much room underneath because everyone was downfield covering A.B. or Juju. Yeah. So that's how Le'Veon got a lot of his stuff in Pittsburgh. If you look at it, they didn't have a lot of design pass plays for him, and that's not me saying, that's Todd Haley saying that. So last year, the Jets clearly did not have a lot of design pass plays for him either, and I don't think they used him enough as a check down receiver. He and Sam just did not have that chemistry that Ben and Le'Veon had, and understandably so. I mean, it was their first year together, so I'd like to see them feature him a little bit more in the passing game because I think he was an underutilized talent in that respect.
Rich Cimini, ESPN New York. Rich, what can Greg Williams do with this defense without C.J. Mosley and Jamal Adams?
Well, I mean, that's their two best players, gone just like that. You know, they did it without C.J. last year. I thought the linebackers played pretty well last year without him. What were they, first or second in run defense last year? They were seventh overall in defense. The thing is, though, they did it without C.J., but they had Jamal basically as a linebacker last year. He was in the box a lot. You don't have that this year. So that's the double whammy, and it's going to be pretty tough. I think you're looking at, I think Avery Williamson is close to being back. I think he'll be one of these starters at inside linebacker. Then you're looking at Neville Hewitt, Blake Cashman getting some run there right now. So it might be more of a rotational thing. I don't think anyone there is as good as CJ. And so that'll be a problem. The bigger problem is replacing Jamal. I mean, he's just a dynamic guy in the box, sideline to sideline. That guy you could create blitz schemes for. You saw it last year with 6.5 sacks. I think Bradley McDougal was a good pickup for them. I think he'll do some things and surprise people, but he's not Jamal Adams. Greg's a really creative guy. He's going to have to come up with some things, break out the smoke and mirrors. It's gonna be hard. Those were their two impact players, and they're gone.
Last one, Rich. Tell me about Ashton Davis. Is this somebody that is going to make an impact on their defense this season, or is this a guy that's going to take a little bit of time?
Well, he can. We saw on Twitter, he can make some pretty acrobatic catches. I think the Jets posted a video of him doing a backflip, making a catch. So, he can do that. Greg Williams really likes him a lot. I don't think he's going to start this year. But Greg has a way of finding roles for guys and, knowing what they do best and finding a role for him. Right now, he's the backup free safety. He's working behind Marcus May, who, by the way, looks really good. And I think you'll see a more versatile Marcus May this year. And Ashton is working behind him right now at free safety. But I think they're going to create a niche for him, just as if they go to a three safety package with Ashton, because Ashton's a really good athlete. The guy was an All-American hurdler in college. I mean, he was a track star at Cal. So he's a good athlete. He's just got to learn a few things. But I think Greg will put him in spots where he can really excel and maybe won't have to think on his feet as much. So I do think you'll see him on the field in some sub-packages.
Well, Rich, as always, appreciate the time. And, thanks for ruining the entire premise of my show tonight.
I've been wrong before, but, I just think with Ndokwe, I think he'll get traded for sure somewhere, but yeah. I'd be really surprised if it's the Jets. Sorry about that, Chris.
That's okay. I won't put you in a bad spot, but maybe somebody can tell the reporter from the Daily News so we can go camp out at the airport. Anyway, that's just me. all right, we'll talk
all
soon.
Right. Thanks.
Yep. Rich Cimini, ESPN New York, 800-919-3776. It's still somebody that, if you wanted to give up a second round pick for, and I'll take a quick look at the Jets cap situation right now, especially after Jamal's gone. I'm sure some of it will count toward that, but the Jets cap situation right now, they have $30 million in cap space right now for this season. So the argument would be, do you want to invest $18 million this year in a player that may be gone plus a draft pick? That I can understand. And bad job by me on the July 15th deadline, not remembering that he can get the long-term deal now. But with that being the case, I think that more than anything, if I were the Jets, I'd have to consider it. I'd have to consider it.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Boy, the Sixers are getting their doors blown off. 100-77 as they start the fourth quarter. Embiid's got 32-9. Everybody else is, Tobias Harris has got 10. Richardson's got 18. But Sixers, the Celtics don't have Gordon Hayward, and they're just blowing the doors off of them. Jason Tatum's got 25. Kemba with 22. Wow. Wow, Sixers are a complete mess. 800-919-3776. I want to spend some time on this for a second because there's been so much debate and so much criticism of the Big Ten and the Pac-12, and specifically the Big Ten, for not being as open with their decision-making as to why they made the decision to push back and postpone fall sports, especially college football. And you've had all the parents getting involved from Ohio State marching on the Big Ten headquarters in Chicago. I mean, just sickening. Parents getting involved. The same people that are complaining that their son should be playing more when it turns out there's another player that's better. And your son isn't playing because he needs to look at himself and work harder and get better. It's not always somebody else's fault. And in this case, you're screaming and yelling. You want your kid out there and you have no idea of the long-term repercussions of COVID-19. Look at what's happened at Notre Dame. It's exploded. They shut down practice. Look at what happened at Carolina. It exploded on campus. They shut down practice. So Kevin Warren, who is the new commissioner of the Big Ten Conference, put out a letter today that said, listen, here's what we did. Here's why we did it. And should they have detailed this sooner? There's no question that they should have detailed it sooner. But he said the chancellors and presidents in the Big Ten overwhelmingly supported postponing fall sports, and we're not going to revisit that. In other words, we're not changing our minds. And you want a list of why it happened? Here's a list of why it happened. Transmission rates continue to rise at an alarming rate, with little indication from medical experts that campuses, communities, or the country can get control of the spread prior to the start of the fall. Many of the medical staffs didn't think the interventions planned would be adequate to keep the spread from happening. The general student body coming back, making it worse. Simply too much they don't know about the virus, the long-term effects, including cardiomyopathy. All of the data on that is preliminary and incomplete. Cardiomyopathy is the thing that Rodriguez up in Boston had. We've had other guys come down with that too, and it's a heart problem that they can have for the rest of their lives as a result of COVID-19. Concerns around contact tracing, inability to social distance, all of the full contact practices and competitions makes it so easy for this to spread. I mean, they went on and on and on and on and gave you every possible reason as to why they canceled or just postponed for the moment the fall sports season. And I get it. I don't have kids. All right. On me for this. I don't get it. If I'm a parent, why do I want to put my kid in the position of potentially contracting the virus by playing and not knowing what the long-term implications of that could be? Why would I do that? I wouldn't. I wouldn't let my kid out there. Parents who are out there marching and screaming and yelling about missing out on college football and the dopes down in the South, this is not the NFL. These are not fully grown men. It is debatable whether you can talk about 18 to 22-year-olds being adults. By the law, they are adults. But why are the parents then screaming and yelling about it? Why are the parents getting involved? Should the kids have some say? Yeah, they should have some say. Should they have the ultimate say? Absolutely not. No shot. The season was postponed for a few reasons. All of the medical reasons outlined, and they can deny it all they want. The liability that is there within, that's a big part of it too. Because the same parents who would be lining up and saying, we got to play, we got to play, we got to play, if you have a kid that comes down with COVID and they suffer long-term repercussions from it, are they not going to sue? I'm guessing they probably are. So this is the point. Stop with this notion that college athletes are professional athletes and it's the same thing. They're not. Think about yourself from 18 to 22 years old. Did you make great decisions all the time? I wasn't an athlete. I was a moron. I was not bright. I'm sure I would want there to be out there, oh no, we got to toughen up. We got to go out there and play. No, 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 no. This is a case where you have to save them from themselves. That's why they don't make this decision. That's why this decision is made by the schools. And when they overwhelmingly voted for that, and they did vote, for those of you worried that they didn't, it just shows that your priorities are not in line.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.